We're doing Sefer Amidot. We're up to Shar Avodat Elokim Perek Tishii, the 9th chapter, page Reish Nun Aleph. Od Me'atzorch Ladat Ki Minvad Shebolam Nefshot Adam Mutad Latitin V'Cheshbon. Further, one has to note that aside from the fact that in the world of spirits, meaning after a person passes away, he will be taken to task. V'al Kol Ma'asim Yevei'o Elokim B'Mishpat. And God will judge him over every single action he has done. V'az Yemem Yikev Lev U'Moshe V'Ruach. And when that happens, he will be heartbroken. His spirit will be broken, k'ma'amar, as the verse says in Proverbs in Mishlei. V'namta v'achitecha b'chlot v'sacha u'she'erecha. You will groan, ultimately, as your flesh and bones rot. Meaning when a person's brought to task, suddenly he looks back and says, oh boy, what did I do? Avlalo le'emunah, ki gam ba'olam hazeh lo yimatzeh manoch be'echlet. But he says, I'm not going to talk about that right now. Yes, there is a judgment day. Yes, a person does regret what he did wrong. But when we speak about the drive to do what's right in this world, so what we're going to discuss now is that a person should know that irrespective of what's yet to come in the world to come, in this world, a person will not find tranquility. He will not be at peace if he doesn't lead a life that's a life that's inspired, a life that's motivated to the service of Hashem. Ki miyom nichnasnu b'brit v'kibanu aleinu ol Torah u'mitzvot. Because from the day that we entered the covenant and took upon ourselves the yoke of performing Torah, mitzvos ne'emar aleinu, from that day onward it was declared upon us, kol ha'poek mimenu ol Torah notnin alav ol malchut v'ol derech eretz. When a person removes the yoke of Torah, the Mishnah warns us in Pirkei Avos, then God made this system in the world that the yoke of public service, the yoke of serving the king in their day, which today would mean paying taxes and doing jury duty and all the fantastic things that are the responsibilities of a citizen and the responsibilities of Derech Eretz, the responsibilities of being a part of society, well, those fall on a person. If a person thinks that he'll free himself from Torah, then he'll be a free man. On the contrary, then he'll suddenly find himself bound to all the other obligations that are out there. There is a yoke of iron on his neck. And instead of serving his Creator, when one frees himself of that, he finds himself suddenly with another burden. Suddenly he finds himself serving a world that's fleeting, a world that's passing, a world that disintegrates. As the Talmud tells us, there were rabbis who would begin their day and say, boy, am I lucky! I'm starting my day in yeshiva. There are other people out there starting their day in the fields. I work hard and they work hard, but look, I get wages at the end of my day. And they don't. I run, they run. I'm running to the world to come. I'm accomplishing. Where are they running to? So a person has to realize that aside from the world to come, in this world, there's a price to be paid. And when a person chooses to walk the way of the Torah, so then the fact that he takes that responsibility on his shoulders frees him from other responsibilities. And this can be understood on many levels. The simplest level is the segula level. It's an amulet. You focus on Torah, so Hashem says, I'm going to free you from other responsibilities. Maybe on a deeper level or on another level of interpretation, we could understand this differently. You have a person who doesn't learn Torah, so he's always got to beat the Joneses. What are we up to, Galaxy 3? There's a sign opposite my house. Isn't it Galaxy 3? There's a big poster outside my house. We have a tall building, Rhinus 6, has a poster you could see down to the end of Ramot. Yeah, so I know. It's Galaxy 3. I didn't have one or two yet, but there's a 3 out there. So if I don't have the Torah, I don't have the focus, the way of life, so then what is there of value in this world? How do I gauge myself? What gives me value? What gives life value? So then there's a constant quest. And then there's the question, am I the more successful politician? Am I the more successful businessman? Do I have the fancier car? When I was growing up, the car was the show card. You wanted to show where you were holding, so your car was a reflection of that. Today, I think it's your cell phone. think so, unless everyone has the same cell phone already, right? I don't know. Most people have the same already. I don't know. I'm used to seeing that finger slide across the screen. Yeah. Yes. So, what do most people have? Fill me in, Yossi. That's called the same. I thought there were two different worlds.
They're both the same.
It's okay.
It's only another brand.
What?
It's only another brand.
That's it. Okay. So, am I a free man, or am I under another yoke? A person thinks that when he accepts 613 mitzvot, he's accepting a yoke. Yeah, he is accepting a yoke, but it's a yoke of freedom. It's a yoke that allows him to live a life that's in sync with nature, in sync with what's best for him. I had a phenomenal experience last night. When I was preparing for the marriage classes years ago, so I was looking for material all over. So I read a lot of Jewish books, and someone recommended to me a website, Marriage Builders. So there was a question that came up. Someone forwarded a question that I felt they needed to see the answer from a secular approach. So I opened up that website. I haven't seen it in years, Marriage Builders. There's this psychologist, and I really found that what he describes there is brilliant and very in key with the Torah. So as I'm looking for the article which I wanted to send the person, I saw another article that caught my attention. Can friends destroy a relationship? And you won't believe what a non-Jewish psychologist writes there. I've been saying this, but I say it from a Jewish perspective. This guy writes, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, but you can look it up online. He says, my recommendation to couples is that they shouldn't have friends of the opposite gender. Blew me away. How could a non-Jew talk that way? Who's going to listen to him? So he writes there, I know you're going to think I'm a fanatic. Wow. So I'm not the only one saying that. Shouldn't have friends of the opposite gender. Your husband doesn't want you to have male friends. Your wife doesn't want you to have female friends. And part of your fidelity towards them demands of you to rescind those relationships. Yes?
There's a brilliant video I found on YouTube called Why Men and Why Guys and Girls Can't Just Be Friends. And they went around all the university campuses in America interviewing guys and interviewing girls. And so they asked, see, one after one with a girl, can guys and girls just be friends? Yes, 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 yes. Then they go around asking all the girls, can that was guys? Can guys and girls just be friends? No, not really. No, 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 no. So the girls think, yeah, I can just be friends. Well, the guys think, no, I can't just be friends.
So, what shocked me was that here's a person that's counseled thousands of couples, and he's come to good conclusions. And then you open up the Torah, and you see, that's what it says. That's the balanced life. What?
What does it say in the Torah?
It says, lo tikrav. Lo tikrevu legalot erva. And the Gemara in Shabbos darshins that the words lo tikrevu teach us that it's not only intimacy that's prohibited, but any form of closeness is prohibited. And that is expanded upon in the halacha, the Gemara and then the halacha, that even to look at a woman's clothes hanging out on the clothesline and to think about her is prohibited. To walk next to her and take in her perfume is prohibited. So even if you don't know her and you don't have a relationship with her, and then the Gemara says, in terms of al terbe sichaim ha'isha, a person has to be careful not to have too much idle chatter. Whatever's necessary, we talk to women. Whatever's unnecessary, we don't flirt with women. You have multiple references to the idea, but the general source is lo tikrevu legalot erva. The fact that the Torah said don't come close to intimacy. And that our sages understood to mean there shouldn't be that closeness between the two. Back to the Magid Midovna. So the Magid Midovna says, aside from the world to come, in this world a person has to realize that he will not find a tranquil life if he doesn't go the path that's really most natural and best for him, the path of the Torah. Umashal le'echad hayah lo ben yachid chacham ben avon. What's it similar to? A person has a son who's smart, he has understanding, it's his only son. And he wanted to teach his son a clean trade. So he sees in the city, there's a person who's very successful at his trade. So he sends his son to apprentice by this person for 6 years. So that he learns the trade well. And the kid, okay, the way kids are, he doesn't take things seriously. And he doesn't focus on his work, he's not interested. So the master who's teaching, he sees what's going on. He understood, if he's so lazy, he's not going to be a success at this trade. So he told the kid, okay, don't bother. I want you to sweep the floors, cut the wood, draw the water from the well. So the kid comes to his father and starts yelling, "Hoi, whoa, I worked so hard for this guy. Why'd you put me as a servant to do such difficult work for this man?" The father said, "What a bum. Ani natati otcha laisha yakar meula hazeh. I'm sorry. He said, "You're the bum," he tells the son. I gave you to this person. What a wonderful person. I gave you over to him to learn a clean trade, an easy trade. But you turned your back on him. You were lazy. What do you think? He took you as an apprentice that you should work. He's teaching, but you're working. You're going to sit back, be lazy. He's going to feed you, take care of you, and you're going to do nothing? I'm sending you right back to his house, and you have a choice. You want to apprentice under him? Fine, things will be nice for you. You want to do what you were doing until now? Fine, I'm warning you, the work will get 7 times as tough. It'll be much, much worse. But you ain't coming back home. I put you there to learn a trade. You want to learn it? So then things will be fine and dandy. You want to do what you were doing until now and be lazy and not learn it? So then I'll give you a lot more work to do. Hanimshal, so what's this allegory coming to illustrate? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ratza Lelamed Et Adam Avodat HaKodesh. God says, I wanted to teach you the holy trade, so to speak. God sent the neshama, the soul, down to this world, el teva olam asiya, to the world of nature, to the world where we're supposed to produce. Al meshech katzuv yadu atzlo itbarach. And God gives it an allotted time. When God sends down our soul, He knows how much time it has. V'chol meshech zman hu yemasum shubat tachat yad ha-teva. So the soul has a period of time where the soul is under the jurisdiction of the natural world. And in order to live, the soul has to live off of the natural world. And if a person accepts the yoke of heaven, so then nature will be subservient to man. Man doesn't have to be subservient to nature. Yigzor, a holy person can decree, Shemesh begivon dom, you, the sun over there, over the Givon Valley, stop. And you see, when Joshua says it, the sun stops. When Elio comes to Ahav, the wicked king, he tells him, I swear by Hashem, there will be no more rain till I say so. 3 years, no rain. Okay, that's a holy person. Nature is subservient to him. But if a person takes off the yoke of heaven, so then he finds himself under the yoke of the world's nature. the nature of the world. והעולם הזה יעבוד עם העבודות קשות אשר מהם יוכל ויתפרנס. And then the world says, you want to eat? You want to make do in this world? You're going to have to work hard. כי אינו ראוי שהעולם הזה ישרת אותו והוא יסתרר גם יסתרר. Because he doesn't deserve to have a situation where the world services him. אבל נותנין או לעולם הזה גם עליו. But on the contrary, suddenly he finds himself working hard. ואם כן איפה, למה תעבוד בזרה? So then why should you do such hard work? It's like the father telling the kid, you don't have to work so hard, just do what you're supposed to do. That's what Hashem says to us. You don't have to work so hard. I gave you a system. The system works. אם יום יצירתך נוצרת לעמל ועבודה כמאמר, כי אדם לעמל יולד, ואין לך בבחירתך כי אם נבחור אחת משניהם. You have to realize you're here to work. You just have to choose which work you're going to do. Where is one going to accomplish? כמאמר זיכרונם לברכה. That's what our sages taught. זכה לעמלה של תורה, לא זכה. A person has a choice. Which work will he do? Will he work within Torah, or will he end up working other work? אבל את המנוחה לא תבחר. But to sit back and rest, that's not an option. ואינה בידך לבחור בה. You don't have that choice to say, I don't want to work. So that's the idea that he's teaching us in this chapter. That aside from the world to come, in this world, a person has to ask himself, where will I subjugate myself? Where will I put myself under whose rule? Am I going to be working to beat the Joneses? Am I going to be working to make the material world my focus, and then I end up being under the yoke of the material world? Or will I say, no, the Torah is my focus, and then the material world is really in my control, and the material world is there to serve me? So those are choices, and if you think about it, the idea that he's saying so simply really has a tremendous amount of depth. And I forgot the name. There's a philosopher who's still alive today in the United States. He wrote the guidebook for a successful rebellion, How to Overthrow a Tyrannic State. And the Iranian rebels used his book, and the Egyptian rebels used his book. And it's a bestseller. All over the world, people are reading it. I don't remember his name. I could look it up, but I don't remember. So he writes over there that one of the rules for a rebellion to succeed is the spirit of the rebellion. He speaks about having prayers at the mass rally. If your whole focus is the physical, so then you're not going to succeed. But if there's a spirit, well, we say that just like Aron Noset Noseav, the idea that the tabernacle, the Aron, the ark, would lift the Kohanim. It was way too heavy for the Kohanim to hold it. They had it hovering over their shoulders, and really it was carrying them. So the spirit of the Torah can carry a person. And the truth is, this is an idea in the book of Mishlei, the spirit carries a person. And on the contrary, when a person says, the spirit isn't for me, the way of the Torah isn't for me, so what choice does he have? Where's his focus going to be? He becomes subservient to the physical world. And again, the Magen Midovna could also be understood on two levels. The simple reading of the Magen Midovna is the simple reading of the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. You have a choice. You take the yoke of Torah, you won't find yourself being forced to do the things that the mundane world demands. You take the focus of the mundane world, so fine, you'll be under the yoke of the mundane world. And I think both understandings in the Magen Midovna are legitimate. I'm not sure which one he meant. Meaning I went along both lines. Obviously, it's easier for me to accept that it's on a philosophical level, but I'm not sure that that's what he meant. Meaning he might have meant on a simple level. You take the yoke of Torah, you will find yourself being less responsible for things in the mundane world. You leave the yoke of Torah, suddenly you'll find that your responsibilities in the mundane world pile up. That's not the course I took in explaining these paragraphs, but I'm not sure which one he meant when he wrote it.